I'm going to ask you right now, before we do anything else, to gather in groups of three or four. And what I'm going to ask you to do is to ask each other this question. What were you most afraid of when you were a child? And the reason that I'm just going to explain some more as to why we do this is that we're not a church that just sits around and hears some guy talking at you. Right? That gets me kind of tired. Well, if I was listening to someone else too. But we're here to hear each other's stories and how God works in our lives. And even in the parts where sometimes we're uncomfortable. And so we're just going to share the first one. The second question we're going to save for now. But what were you most afraid of when you were a child? So my hope is you'll find someone you don't know that well, introduce yourselves, and have this conversation. So if you'll go to three or four, what are you afraid of when you were a child? But the reason why we're talking about fears is obvious from my guess. You can make out from the passage today. These fishermen were really scared. And has anyone ever done any sailing? Any sailors here? Yeah? Oh, you've done some sailing? A little bit? Like in a... What kind of boats did you get? Like the little lasers or the little... I mean the small... They're called lasers. Okay. But the little boats. Are you ever getting a scary situation?
I've been in a canoe that capsized.
Oh, yeah?
Just after the ice melted.
Oh, that must have been bad.
It wasn't very deep. It was freezing cold. So you can't even skate because it's just so cold.
Oh my goodness. That's pretty terrifying. Ice water is pretty nasty. But if you can imagine then, a canoe is, you know, and then you could stand, right? You said it was shallow enough. Yeah. But what it is that I've actually met real sailors. There's actually a ministry here in Vancouver that specifically goes out onto these container boats, these cargo ships, and they go and they share Christ, they sing songs with some of these people. Some of them are Christians, but they're on these boats for a very long time. They're not like, you know, taking a flight from here to Singapore or something. It's like they're on these boats for weeks on end. And there's some stories that they tell that are pretty mind-blowing. Because they talk about how scared... These are not like little, you know, scrawny people. Like, these are like, you know, hardcore sailors. Like, they're like burly, you know, because they got to do a lot of carrying and lifting. So pretty strong-looking guys. And they would say how terrified they were when they're out at sea in open water. You know, the Pacific Ocean is not very Pacific. It's actually quite turbulent. And they would talk about how they would be just scared to death. That they thought that they would never make it to shore ever again. They'd never see their families. Because they would tell me, and I can't even imagine, the waves being, you know, 2 to 3 times bigger than their boat. I mean, those are big boats. I see them in the harbor, well, that's a big boat. It's bigger than all those little boats around. But these cargo ships, and they say it is so much higher, and they're afraid that their boat will be crushed, will be flipped. I can't even imagine the kind of storm that would have been. But if you think about it, in Jesus' story, this is the Sea of Galilee. And the Sea of Galilee is known to be, well, calm sometimes, but also extremely turbulent at other times. Apparently, it's just the way the winds kind of come up. A squall or a huge storm can ensue in a matter of moments. You can actually see, I'm told that you could see it roll in and it would just kick up and you would not be able to get to shore. You would not be able to get to safety. You'd be caught in it and you'd have to weather it. And in this case, if you remember, Jesus was teaching his disciples and he was telling parables to the crowd. And there's a particular situation. You remember that everyone was gathering around Jesus. They wanted to hear what he had to say. Both his enemies, as well as those who wanted to be healed and really wanted to learn from him. Just before this passage, we also read a section where he was in a house and they couldn't even get into the house. Like the people coming were just surrounding the house and people had to dig a hole in the roof. to get their friend in. So it was insane. So Jesus says this. If you read the passage carefully, he gets into the boat and he says, let's go to the other side. Because even before, he couldn't get away from the crowd. But as they got into the boat, it says that they began to move away from the crowd. They left the crowd behind in verse 36. And he took him along. It is a very interesting turn of phrase, at least in my translation, the NIV. It's just as he was. And then the way that meant was like, he just got in the bus. Okay, let's go. Let's go across the other side. Let's go to the other side of this lake. And Jesus falls asleep. If you actually put this in context, Jesus has been incessantly teaching, healing, casting out demons. It just doesn't stop. We welcome all children here. Big and small. And so Jesus, you have to imagine, is completely exhausted. And he's trying to get away from the crowd. He's trying to get some rest. And so the only rest he gets is like on the transit. It's like falling asleep on the sky train or something after a long day on the bus. The only thing is their bus gets hit by another bus. Well, not really, but you see the storm kick up. And he's so tired, we're assuming that he doesn't wake up. I don't know how this happens, because it says the boat's starting to fill up. Like, I don't know how it is that, maybe it felt like a waterbed. They didn't have those things back then. But he would have felt that water, perhaps. But it says he was on a cushion. I don't know if it was one of these safety flotation devices. I don't think it was. But he was on a cushion, and it was probably getting a little bit wet. And there it is. Maybe he's elevated. Who knows? But the boat is starting to fill up. And anyone who knows anything about boats, and you can even imagine those who don't know anything about boats, when your boat starts filling up with water, that is a no-no, a bad thing. You start bailing things out. And they knew that they couldn't bail out fast enough. And this is where they turn to Jesus. They are afraid for their lives. They know. This is not a maybe they're going to die. Maybe it's getting a little dangerous. They know that they are going to die. Your boat is filling with water. You cannot bail fast enough. You are going to drown. The Lake of Galilee, the Sea of Galilee, is not a little lake. If you are caught in the middle of it and in the middle of a storm, you have no chance if your boat goes under. And that was exactly what was happening to them. That's what they saw occurring. And I don't know how they felt. We're not told. But I can probably imagine, so can you. There's Jesus, who casts out demons, who heals the sick, raises the dead, sleeping. And despite the fact they know he's done all these miraculous things, in this new circumstance, they have never seen him calm the storm. You have to think about that. We assume, we know what happens at the end of the story, but they don't know. They have never seen him come. He's fed 5,000, or whatever, stuff like this. They've seen cool stuff happen. But this is something new. So they wake him up, and it's interesting how they phrase this. They don't say, save us. They don't say, help us. Do you see what they say? What is the first thing they say? Don't you care? Yeah. Sad, isn't it? I don't know if you've ever said this before, but I have. to God. I've seen miracles. I've seen good things happen to good people. You know, I've seen God's power. You know, I've seen Him transform. I've known His peace. But at certain points in my life, when things go really bad, things I've never experienced before, things that may not actually take my life away, but things that make my life seem unlivable, whether it be depression, which I've experienced, whether it be loss, whether it be betrayal, a broken relationship, all these things, we begin to ask the question, and if you've never asked this question, God bless you. But I know I've asked this question. And even those who do not believe, who've never seen, they ask this question. And they ask Christians this question. How can you say God cares? Don't you care, God? Because sometimes it feels like He doesn't. Despite all our prayers, despite all our hopes, despite all our expectations, we call out and it seems like nobody's there at the other end of the line. That God has fallen asleep. And not only has He fallen asleep, He's asleep at the wheel of the universe. You know what I'm saying? This is what this passage is about. This is why it occurs in Scripture. Because it doesn't dodge. Christians should never dodge the feeling and the reality of the emptiness of the possibility of the reality of our own feelings that God is asleep in a time of our turmoil. If you don't feel that, and if your faith is strong, like I said, God bless your heart. And I mean that, you know, without sarcasm. But there are people, many people, who ask this question. And some people are too afraid. Because, I don't know, perhaps our theological construct. Because we're told that we should be reprimanded and that we're bad Christians by uttering what is in the deepest part of our heart. We think that we will become faithless. We're afraid we will lose our faith by saying these words. Don't you care? Don't you care if we drown? When we're in over our heads, Jesus actually doesn't reply. The first thing we're told in Mark He does is that He gets up. He rebukes the wind. I don't know what He said. We know what He said to the waves. Quiet, be still. And then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. He acted first. I don't know if you think this is significant, but it might actually be. question is, don't you care? God does not respond. Jesus does not respond verbally. He does it by action. He does it by getting up and speaking to the very forces of nature that are out to destroy the disciples. He tells all those forces of nature to be quiet and to be still. And they listen. But then this. He says to his disciples, and I don't know if I get this yet. Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? In the translation that I'm reading here, there are a few words worth noting in regards to how the translator has chosen. It's not just why are you afraid? Why are you so afraid? It's not a general sense of anxiety. The so implies that they were terrified. That it was at a degree of fear that was, I don't know. I don't know if you've ever been that afraid. That terrified. And the other word worth noting is the word still. Do you still have no faith? Implying that he thought that they should have had some understanding of faith already. Perhaps it was all those healings. Perhaps it was all those exorcisms. Perhaps he expected that they may have extrapolated that the Lord of all the physical bodies of people, but the one who spoke words over even death. Maybe they thought that God was only the God of the physical realm. Maybe they thought God was only God of people's bodies contained in that particular part of life. Maybe they thought he was also just a good teacher, that was a part of his dominion. And maybe they thought that he was good with food, you know? And maybe they thought there were certain restrictions to the power of God, to the power of Jesus. I don't know what they were thinking. And I, because of the way that Mark writes, he leaves swaths unsaid. But this is why we have an imagination. This is why experience can inform us. And a sanctified experience, a sanctified imagination, is one that rightly sees God and asks the question, what, Jesus, did you actually mean by this? But there's another way to read this. That when he asks them, why are you so afraid? It wasn't because of the storm anymore. The immediate words after this, it says, they were terrified and asked each other, who is this? Even the wind and waves obey him. They were no longer terrified because of their circumstance. And I wonder if Jesus is asking them, why are you so afraid? Because He saw the look on their faces after the storm was calmed. There is a reason why the biblical authors put things a particular way, in a particular order. I noted that Jesus did not answer them beforehand when they were afraid of the wind and the waves. At that point, He said, why are you so afraid? I got this, guys. You know? And then He goes to the storm and says, be quiet. Instead, the text tells us that they were terrified. They say, don't you care? He gets up, calms the storm, and then says, why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? I wonder what their faces looked like, both before the storm was calm and after. But it's very clear from the way that Mark tells this story. And we believe that Mark got this story directly, probably from Peter and some of the disciples. I can only imagine, using that sanctified imagination, Peter telling Mark, or the other disciples, you know, sitting around going, oh yeah, I remember that day. That was something else. And Mark just keeps it pretty simple. He just conveys the fact that these guys were terrified of what Jesus did. They were no longer terrified by the circumstance. They were terrified by Him. Even though they've been with Him, even though they know His teaching, even though He's lived with them day in, day out, He still surprised them. There is a wonderful description of what this is in the Old Testament that sometimes we don't quite grasp, and it's called the fear of the Lord. It's not that we're afraid of Him because He will punish us, but we're afraid of Him because we have no idea who He is. How big is your God? Do you believe that He loves you? That this one who can command all nature, the stars themselves, we're told, the future of this planet, and all who live on it. Sometimes we are afraid in our circumstances and we ask, God, do you not care? And in this moment, God reveals His enormity, the vastness of His might. Jesus, contained within a human body, God who is divine, commanding everything that they could see to be absolutely still. Friendship with Jesus is something that Jesus invites us to. We know from the other Gospels, He says, I don't call you my servants, I call you my friends. But what does it mean to be friends with God? I would like to think of God as my friend. And He is. But He's a friend like unlike any other friend I've ever had or ever will have. Some might describe it as living with a bear. Some, in certain cultures, is with an elephant, the king of the jungle, the true king, that even the lions, of course, don't dare touch. Or something, someone, even greater. sometimes all our analogies seem a bit shallow when we talk about God. I don't mind t-shirts that go, "Jesus is my homeboy." I think that's nice. That's pretty, you know, kitsch. And it will be. And give it a few more years. But he's not just your homeboy. This is the Lord of the universe. And we lose the sense of awe. We lose the sense of believing that he loves us. And I wonder if what Jesus is asking when he says, "Do you still have no faith?" He's actually asking them not whether or not they believe in him or not, because they just saw. He's asking, "Do you trust me? Do you trust that I who calm these waves will not hurt you? Because that is the source of their terror." Well, do you? Let's close in prayer. You who calm the wind and the waves, you who know the storms of our life, our dashed expectations and hopes and dreams, the devastation, the plain disappointment. Answer us and teach us to answer you. We question you sometimes and ask, "Do you not care?" And you ask us in return. Why are you so afraid? So, Lord, teach us to see you for who you are. Reveal yourself, Lord Jesus, to us. You who are God, and you who would be our friend. Show us how we live with you. Help us to trust you. To have faith. Amen.